Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Today we're going to be talking about caring for your summer garden. And our guest is Amy Enfield. She's a horticulturist for Bonnie Plants and an R&D product development manager for live goods at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company. So great to have her with us. And Amy Enfield, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to be able to talk to you. Here you are. You've got 3 degrees, including a PhD in plant science. How did you get interested in gardening?
It actually happened when I was fairly young. So about 9, 10 years old, my dad started working for a company as a distributor rep for lawn and garden supplies. And so gardening had always been big in the family, but that's when all the fun stuff started coming into the house. So all the fun garden decorations and things, and it just kind of like exploded from there. And I've always liked playing with plants. Flowers have always been a love. So I was one of those lucky people that was able to take, a hobby, something I really enjoyed doing, and turn it into a career.
Yeah, it's great. And most of us, so many people I've talked to who are kind of in the field, in your field, got their start at a very young age. I certainly developed a fondness for gardening back when I was in 4-H. I had a gardening project in 4-H, and my mom had a big garden, and I guess that's how so many of us get interested in it.
It was the same for me as well, and my parents were actually the veggie garden leaders for our club. I think it was meant to be at some point.
Well, now you work for Bonnie Plants, and I know I've purchased plants with the Bonnie Plants tag on it. Tell us about the company.
So we've been around for over 100 years. We started in Alabama. Headquarters are still down there. And we started with cabbage. So a woman named Bonnie was actually the person who founded the company. And they started very small down in the southeast, and they have grown over the last 100 years. And then about 5 years ago, they started to partner with Scotts Miracle-Gro. So I'm actually located in Ohio because all of the research and development we do for Bonnie now takes place at Scotts. And it's just continued to explode from there. And where we've kind of moved in the last couple years is, what's this new gardener look like? They're kind of non-traditional. We're not growing in big in-ground gardens anymore. We're growing, on patios and containers. We're growing more in raised beds. So there's been this huge shift in the kind of plants we want to offer within the line so that we are also satisfying that new group of gardeners.
Yeah, interesting. And what do you do with the Miracle-Gro part of your job?
My Miracle-Gro part of the job is it's all fun. It all interconnects, which makes it fun. So we do a lot of plant trialing. So within our live goods program for research and development, we are screening vegetables, we are screening herbs, we are screening flowers, we are now screening houseplants. So getting out there, getting a good feel of what kind of genetics and different varieties are available in the market and which ones play well and will work really well for the consumer. So I get to play with plants pretty much year-round, whether it's outside with field trials or whether it's in the greenhouse with trials in there as well. So we always have pretty plants floating around at work.
Larry in Green Bay has a question for you. Let's go there. Larry, hi.
Hi. My question is, I bought a couple tomatilla plants, and I planted them in my garden, and my garden is growing very nicely. I have regular tomatoes that have grown. I've got squash and stuff that is looking good. And on my tomatilla plants, I have all sorts of blossoms, and then I have several of these papery round things that the tomatilla is supposed to be inside of.
Yeah.
Not a single one of them has the fruit. The plant looks beautiful, but there is absolutely no tomatillas.
No.
Did you only plant one plant or two plants?
We planted two.
Yeah, because generally the number one reason you don't get fruit on tomatillo is they actually need two plants to get good fruiting. The only other thing I have seen, and since you said you have plenty of tomatoes, that's generally probably not the cause, is that if you overfeed tomatillos, you won't get good fruit set either. But you said you've got tomatoes, and they're very, very closely related. So the fact that you've got one and not the other.
Yeah.
I'm at a loss. Have you, you've seen pollinators? You've seen bees and other things around the garden?
Yes. In fact, this morning I was watching a bee go from blossom to blossom on the tomatilla plant.
Well,
you may still get some yet. I know mine, I planted a tomatillo last year, and I didn't get any fruit until really late in the season, almost to the point that I had given up on it. And then I actually got fruit, and I didn't get them all off in time. And then I had all sorts of little tomatillos popping up in my garden this year. So they may still fill, especially since you've got two.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't. Yeah, overfeeding and not having two plants are the two biggest causes for a fruit not filling. But like you said, you've got pollinators, you've got two plants, your tomatoes are producing. Yeah, you've stumped me. I'm at a.
Well,
no,
I think you're right, though, Amy. Larry, just hang on there and let's see what happens. You might still. I mean, there's a lot of summer left. You might still get some.
There is. Yeah.
Yeah. You might still get some. So. Hang in there. Appreciate your call. Barbara in Milwaukee has a question for you. Barbara, hello.
Hi. I have a bee balm plant, and it has white powdery dots, but they're not powdery in the sense. They look powdery, but you can't knock them off. And I'm just, and I water them by putting a plate of water underneath them. They're on my balcony. And I'm wondering if you know what it is, and can I salvage my plant?
It is probably, even though you can't knock it off, it is probably powdery mildew.
Yeah.
Bee balm is really prone to it. Make sure you keep the foliage dry, and if you're collecting, if you're watering base at the soil, that will help. But because you've already got it, you're probably going to want to find a fungicide and spray on it. It won't necessarily, if any leaves were massively damaged, it won't make those like grow back, but it will stop it from spreading. And there's lots of different like copper based fungicides, kind of organic fungicides that will work really well on powdery mildew, but you want to kind of nip it now because it can take out your whole plant pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And the temperatures have been really ideal for diseases this year.
You have a lot of powdery mildew around Wisconsin, to be perfectly honest. There you go, Barb. Thank you for calling. Mike in Madison, let's go to you. Hi, Mike.
Yes, hi. I got a quick question. My yard is surrounded by some big ash trees in the front yard, and in my backyard I got a huge walnut tree. So I'm trying to find I have limited space where I can grow anything, and I want to build some raised beds for next year, and I was wondering if you guys had a tip or a trick on how to measure, or not really measure the light, but determine where the most light is in my yard. I know it seems like a silly question besides just looking, but is there any tricks that you guys have for monitoring how much sun and how long it will be on, you know, my yard?
Yeah.
So your west and southern exposures are always going to have naturally the most light because of the way the sun tracks. But if that's the side your trees are on, that will also provide shading to that. Your next sunniest spot is going to be the east side, and that's going to be the cool morning sun. And as long as you have like one of those three sides that you can get at least 4 to 6 hours of sunlight, that would be the ideal spot to build any raised beds. North side tends to be the darkest, so that's like always my where you're going to put stuff that doesn't need any sun, which is going to be stuff like some leafy greens and that. So it's not the ideal spot for a raised bed. But depending on what side of the property your trees are on, if you have a west or an east or a south exposure that gets 4 to 6 hours, that would be my recommendation for where to put your raised beds.
There you go, Mike. And, you know, the other thing is, how many hours of sunlight do we really need, Amy, for, you know, productive? Obviously, it's best to have, you know, a lot of sun, but how many, what's sort of the minimum?
So more is always better. But when you're looking at stuff that produces a fruit, so peppers, tomatoes, eggplant, zucchini, other squash, you're looking at a minimum of 6 hours. And that could be you know, you get 6 or 4 hours in the morning. Maybe you get a break in the afternoon, but then you get some late evening sun. That's fine as long as it's getting about six, 8 hours is ideal minimum for the day. Now, if you're only focusing on leafy greens, you only want lettuce, lettuce, arugula, kale, things like that, and some of the herbs, you can get away with more like 4. So if your only option is a eastern exposure where you're only going to get the cool morning sun, leafy greens are going to perform really well for you. But you may not get the tomato fruit set that you want because you're not going to get all that sun and all that energy that plant needs on that same side.
Yeah, there you go, Mike. And so the other thing then is just to sort of take a look outside and sort of, when is the sun hitting? When does it start hitting that area? And check every once in a while, look outside and see, is it still there? And if it is, you know, count the hours. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Bob in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi. I know that we can get the Bonnie plant products in the big box stores. And I know that the big box stores can sell those products at cost or below cost because they actually make money on the parent company product, the Scotts fertilizer. I guess I'm worried that, Larry, and maybe you can answer this, that you have a guest who's promoting products that are displacing business from local Wisconsin businesses and promoting business of a multinational company, namely Monsanto.
All right. Well, let Amy have a chance first. Amy, I don't believe you've mentioned a particular product at all, although you do represent companies, but comment.
No. I'm not going to mention specific products. Bonnie does do all their growing independently. We handle their marketing side of the business and their R&D business for them, but they are still their own independent company. We are a partnership. Because there are so many different products out there, and because I got my start in the independent side, unless you ask me for a specific product by name, I'm going to give you general recommendations and then let you pick the best product for you. If I was more in a Scott's role and not a Bonnie's role today, then maybe I would offer more Scott's products. But I am open to all products that will work for the gardener and making sure that they get the best product in their hands.
And that's kind of I think the approach we've always taken, Bob, on the show. And here we have somebody with Amy with 3 degrees in plant sciences, a couple of bachelor's and master's in horticulture, and a PhD in plant and environmental sciences. And talking with her before the show and so forth, she's a very good representative, maybe of her company, but I think she also, so far, has had some pretty good recommendations for various products for various plants. So there you go. That's the best we can do at this point, Bob. I appreciate your call. Amy Enfield, our guest, horticulturist for Bonnie Plants. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Jane Rotunda, our on-air producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. And you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Amy Enfield, horticulturist for Bonnie Plants and product development manager for live goods at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company, visiting about caring for herbs and vegetables today. Let's take another call. Rosemary in Wyckoff, Minnesota. It's your turn. Hi, Rosemary.
Hello. I have a question about peppers. I have some hot peppers.
Yeah.
And I planted them last year and didn't have very good luck, so I changed the spot in the garden. Planted them this year, and they're beautiful plants, but there's not a pepper on them. Is my soil just a dud for peppers, or what am I doing wrong with them?
When did you plant your pepper plants?
Oh, and you know, when they, I don't know. It's been a while. I mean, they've been in there a while. I didn't plant my garden real early. It was well, you know, well into the season.
I brought that up.
My tomato plants are beautiful.
I brought it up because I know I've had experience in the past where I planted my pepper plants a little too early, and then they got a little cold. And then plants were nice, but I got no peppers.
hot peppers are really known for that. They don't like to be planted until the soil is nice and warm. They should honestly be planted several weeks after bell peppers are planted. No flowers. Are you seeing flowers and no fruit, or no flowers either?
There's a few flowers on them, but very,
much,
very few.
How
and
much
when would be
getting?
The time to plant them then?
In Minnesota, let's see. Probably easily into June.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, maybe
early.
Yeah, maybe mid-June.
you could probably. I know I'm in mid-Ohio, central Ohio, and I didn't even plant my garden until the end of June. Mainly that's because I had time. But we got everything in late here because even winter wouldn't leave here really early this year. So we went out fairly late with our vegetables as well for that same reason that, you know, peppers get a little cold. They don't come back from that very well.
Yeah, and the interesting part is, as Rosemary says, you got these nice plants, but you just don't get any peppers, and it doesn't seem to make sense. But that's probably what happened, Rosemary. There you go. Thank you for calling. Jordan in Grafton will give you a chance. Hi, Jordan.
Hi. I'm a fairly new gardener. What drew me into gardening was the super hot peppers, like your Carolina Reapers and you know, scorpions and such. I found to have the best success with containers, though. I usually do very large containers. But my question is, I've got 10 of them this year. I've got a lot of fruit on them that's ripening, and I've been feeding them Jack's petunia seed. And I'm wondering, when should I stop giving them that, especially with all the peppers coming up now?
You've got well-developed, almost ripened fruit, you can start cutting back a little bit. But because this is the point where they're putting all their energy into that fruit, you also want to make sure that you keep that plant fed. You're right on that border cusp. As soon as you start picking, you can start ramping back nutrition on them. But I would keep going a little bit longer just to make sure that the plant still has plenty of energy to make sure that you get all of your fruit off of it.
Yeah. There you go, Jordan. Thank you. Barb in Inver Grove Heights, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi. My husband has a question about Miracle-Gro. We've had some in storage for a couple years, and it's in the garage. So does it stay effective in that kind of weather, cold in the winter and
hot
that
in the
many
summer.
Years?
A couple of years, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the blue powder?
Yes.
And the package is nice and tightly sealed up?
Well, yeah, it's got a twist tie on it.
It's been open. No, it's still closed. It's still good. As long as it's not mixed with water, it stays good pretty much indefinitely. We've had some sitting around. I personally have some sitting around that's probably 5 or more years old. It may get a little hard, just kind of break it up, but it's still good. You can still mix it with water and still use it.
All right. There you go, Barb. Thank you very much for calling. Bruce in Oshkosh, it's your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I'm having kind of a poor garden, and I think it's because my pH is too high. It's about 8.5 to 9.
Ouch.
I'm pretty much a container gardener. I've been putting on some sulfur called, fast-acting sulfur by NCAP. I pretty much follow the directions for pounds per square foot. I've been putting it on for a year, and I can't get it to lower the pH at all. Any advice on what I should try next?
Yeah. What do you think, Amy?
Grow and raise beds. there is some soil that no matter what you do to it refuses to move. And when you finally do get it to move, it seems to move right back. And if you're at an 8 or a 9, you may have to do multiple years of treatment with sulfur to get it where you want it. If you're having great success in containers and even have a spot to put raised beds in, that may be your best bet. Wow, 9. I haven't seen 9 in a long time.
No, that's really, really high. And I think you're absolutely right. Raised beds are really great, aren't they, Amy? You know, you've got situations. I'm wondering, somebody... actually not more than one person has said, I had trees that have jug lawn, and so I put a raised bed in. Sometimes they still have problems.
Yeah, because that chemical will seep up. The walnuts put out, it will actually seep upwards. I like raised beds. Where I am in Ohio, it is solid clay. I am lucky to get a shovel about a half inch into the ground. It's so hard. So I am pretty much relegated to raised beds and containers. But I have my whole south side of my house is 18-inch raised beds, and I have had great crops out of it. I just kind of said, you know what, it's not worth fighting with the soil that I have around here. I'm going to grow on top of it instead.
There you go. Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate the call. Margie in Milwaukee, we'll go to you now. Hi, Margie.
Hi there. I live in a 55-plus community, and I planted the boxes by the front door with flowers, geraniums and pink vinca and those kind of things. And in the middle of it, a corn stalk started. And we've been getting a kick out of watching it. I'm assuming some bird dropped something there. And it looks like I'm going to get maybe 4 or 5 years off of this, but it doesn't look like the regular corn. Could it? What's the difference between sweet and field? And if it's field corn, can you eat it or is it not good?
Field corn is very starchy. It doesn't get the sugar in it. So while technically you can eat it, it is not going to taste very good. My guess is it probably wasn't a bird. You probably had a squirrel friend who took it from a feeder and planted, buried it there to come back for it later. Not that he was ever going to remember he put it there. I have seen much random corn stalks popping up in many flower beds, and that's generally what happens. There was a bird feeder close by. Squirrel started hoarding seed, and you get corn stalks the next year. I've never seen them actually get ears on them, so you're farther than what I've ever seen, but it's not going to be sweet. It's not going to taste good.
Yeah, it's not going to taste as good for sure. I've eaten it. I've eaten field corn. Generally, when the ears are kind of young, they seem to taste a little better. So if I were you, you're not going to get hurt by eating an ear. You can give it a try and see what happens. See how you like it. But Amy's right. It's not going to be as sweet for now, darn sure.
I say you could let the ears dry down and then you could put the whole stalk out or the whole ear out for the squirrels if you want to feed the squirrels later in the fall.
Oh, that's another good idea. I like that. Thank you, Margie. Appreciate it. Well, Christy in Racine has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Christy.
Hey, Larry. I have been driving around a lot lately, and in July I always enjoy chicory, and I was just wondering how I could propagate that in my yard.
How do you grow chicory? Any ideas on that, Amy?
You want to come to my yard and dig it up? It's probably easiest to remove the whole plant if you can not get in trouble for doing it. But otherwise, you've got to fight the birds for when the seed heads form and actually harvest the mature seed and then try to sprout it. Generally, the birds beat everybody to it. But if you find a spot where you are actually able to dig the plants out without getting in trouble, that's probably the best way to get it moved.
Yeah. Yeah, is there any way, can you kind of cover the plants, you know, just before the birds get at it?
Yeah, once you start noticing the flowers dry down, yeah, you'd almost have to put some sort of covering, like a sheer cloth over it, like frost blankets or something to let the seed head form, but keep the birds from taking it before you get a chance.
There you go, Christy. Thank you. Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Pam.
Good morning. Well, I agree about chicory. I have 20 acres, and if I had it all in chicory, I'd be happy. I was wondering, for how many years I've been going to start butterfly weed. If I had 20 acres of that, that would be good, too. And echinacea and the seeds from the yellow daylily. Now, can those be planted in the fall and just, will they come up in the spring? Because that's what I've wondered for how many years.
Yeah, so like echinacea especially, one of the easiest things to do to propagate that, and we used to do this with our poppies as well, is once the flowers kind of die and you get that full seed head, it's like when you start seeing the birds, come visit your echinacea stalks in the fall. I would break them off and just kind of put them on the ground. And then that seed will get it, what we call vernalization or cold period over the winter. And then you'll see them start to sprout the next spring.
So they don't even need to be buried?
No, you could just lay them on the ground.
Well, how about the yellow daylily?
I haven't seen, daylily just tends to spread on its own. I don't know how viable the seeds are, but I know echinacea is a good candidate for that. And then some of the coreopsis as well will self-seed themselves.
But how daylily, butterfly weed?
Butterfly weed, yeah, like I kill it more than I get it to establish. Milkweed will, if you're doing not the butterfly weed, but the more traditional milkweed, that will kind of self-sow itself through. So theoretically, butterfly weed should do the same thing. So when those should self-disperse themselves because they'll get kind of that wind-dispersed seed on it. So as long as you can get them to go to seed, they should move themselves on their own. Now, you could take the heads if you wanted to kind of control where it ended up and make sure those winged seed heads land within your garden or within the area you want them to. But they're going to do a good job dispersing themselves. Echinacea kind of needs a little help.
There you go, Pam. I thank you very much for calling. Good luck. Well, let's go to Joe in Chippewa Falls next. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Pass along a nice, unique kind of above-ground garden that I've made out of something unique. And Chippewa Falls, like the winter parades that I make a lot of parade floats out of my trailer. So I repurposed the 12-inch columns that are 10 feet high. I cut them in half, drilled holes in the bottom, and filled them with dirt. And I'm blown away by the amount of vegetables and flowers that are growing out of it right now. It's just quite unique.
I'm trying to picture this. So you've got, run that by me again. So.
Okay, so I've got 10-foot, 12-inch columns that were for part of the parade float, and I sawed them in half. So now they're like a half full, and I put them up on blocks and to put dirt in them and drilled holes through it, and then planted some vegetables and stuff. My squash are growing. I have dozens of tomatoes, and that's only in about 6 inches of dirt, and I'm really amazed.
Wow. Amy, what do you think? Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, it goes completely with my theory that as long as you can put a drain hole in it, you can grow in anything. so I had a friend who, he was adamant he was going to grow sweet corn on his back deck, and he had an old igloo cooler, and he just popped the drain hole in it, left it open, filled it with soil, and grew sweet corn in an igloo cooler on his back porch. So, as long as you can put a drain hole in it, you can grow in anything you want. And while it may not be deep with his columns, he's got plenty of vertical space for that, or horizontal space for those roots to grow. So he's still giving it plenty of soil volume to grow in.
Ah, so the roots kind of spread out is what
they do.
They'll
go lateral, yep, they'll go side to side.
Whereas in like straw bale, doing straw bale gardening, you look at the plants at the end of the year, like the tomato plants, and they just go right straight down.
Yep.
They go right straight down. Joe, thanks. That's great that you called. I appreciate it very much. Ryan in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. My question is about long-tailed mealybugs. I found them on one of my Trinidad peppers and some dill plants that I have.
And you're wondering how to get rid of them or why they got there?
If you guys know how to get rid of them, if there's a way. I've dealt with them indoors before and tried all kinds of stuff, and nothing worked. I eventually got rid of the plants, which is what I did with the dill and the pepper this year, too, right away when I found them.
Hmm. Amy, what do you think?
Our joke around here is that we always, like, if they're an intern we're upset with because we're going to give them Q-tips and rubbing alcohol, and that's going to be their job for the next 2 weeks. The only bugs outside is... We're not nice sometimes. Mealybugs outside is fairly uncommon. The benefit is they're a little bit easier to deal with than scale is. One of the easiest things to do is just start hitting them with a stream of water and knocking them off. The rubbing alcohol trick does work. Outside, that's a little tedious because you can't put them at eye level very easily. But the other thing is that horticultural oils will also work because it will smother them. You've just got to be cautious about when you use it, and then that you thoroughly coat the plant so that you're actually hitting all of them. And then you may have to do it multiple times because mealybugs are really good about getting into every nook and cranny and then crawling out once you think they're all gone. I know I had to throw out some houseplants this week from a trial because they had mealybug on them, and it was just not worth trying to deal with them.
Tough nuts to crack there, Ryan. Thank you so much for calling. You mentioned scale, and scale is the worst. I've had scale on limey, my lime tree, and it's a losing battle, it seems like. I don't know what to do.
It's hard because you've got limited options. It used to be the best options were like a good systemic, but there's not really systemics. There's not many on the market anymore, and there's really none listed for edibles because it moves into the fruit as well. It's a lot of hand picking. If it gets really bad on one stem, sometimes just cutting that stem off works, but that can ruin a whole tree that way. If they're soft bodied scales and not hard scales, oils, hort oils will work on them. It kind of just smothers and suffocates them. Scale's not fun, and you hope not to find it on anything.
Yeah, that's for sure. Amy Enfield, our guest today, horticulturist for Bonnie Plants and an R&D product development manager for Live Goods at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company, our guest today. I'm Larry Mealer. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Amy Enfield, horticulturist for Bonnie Plants and R&D product development manager for Live Goods at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. And callers online, so I think we'll go right back to the phones, Amy, and take a call from Diane in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Hey, I have a question about some tomato plants. They have nodules climbing up the sides of the stalk of the plant. It almost looks like cornrows. They started out green and are turning brown now. What do you think that is?
Nodules.
They will actually, it's very common in tomatoes. They will all produce it. And if you were to bury that stem, or if that stem were to be like wrapped in soil and kept moist, those would form roots. So tomatoes is a really cool plant that you can bury it really deep and it will root up the stem, and those little nodules will actually form roots. So like root initials would be the best term to say for them. But they're very common on tomatoes.
Oh, that's awesome. I thought maybe they have some sort of bug or, you know, some disease with them. That's awesome.
No, yeah. And as the plant ages, they kind of get a little brown as the stem kind of gets older. So no, very natural. Supposed to be there.
There you go. Yeah, and actually, it's a good idea to bury those plants, you know, deep when you get them. Don't be afraid to do that, right, Amy?
Yeah, it makes them stronger. So you actually get a really strong root system below ground. Now, if you want tomatoes right away, it will set it back a little bit, but you'll get a much better plant for it.
Speaking of tomatoes, my neighbors showed me a tomato and one of his that ripened, and it had blossom end rot, which is darn, you know, and it brings to mind a couple of things. One, somebody once said, well, if you take the tomato, if it's not showing the blossom end rot, if you take the tomato off the vine before it's completely ripe and allow it to ripen, you know, wherever, it won't develop that. And I'm not sure if that's true or not. Do you know?
Generally, it forms fairly early. So if it's getting to a point where it's ripe enough that you can pick it to let it finish ripening, you generally have blossom end rot at that point already. So it may still develop even after you pick it, because it's probably already there. We're getting it really bad here, and we're noticing it's all on our first round of tomatoes. Like the new ones that are forming are perfectly fine, and it's not uncommon that some of your first harvest for tomatoes will get it. Peppers will as well. And with as weird as our weather has been this season, and I think you guys have been close to as warm as we have been.
Yeah.
Like very prone for it. Yeah, because you know, one of those hot days you forget to water, and that can be enough to induce it to start to form, especially if your fruit's starting to develop.
Yeah, that's unfortunate for sure. Holly in Green Bay will give you a chance. Hi, Holly.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a small native Wisconsin prairie in my backyard that has flowers and all kinds of milkweed to help the monarchs. This year, the neighbor behind me sprayed the grass with all kinds of pesticide, and the larvae, the caterpillars, have failure to pupate. So I was given advice to take in the egg on the leaf and help it grow inside and feed it leaves that are washed with bleach water and rinsed well. But they still don't seem to be pupating. So my question is, does that pesticide actually get in the root of the plant, and is there nothing I can do to help?
I don't have a solid answer for that, because a lot of it's going to depend on what they actually sprayed. But yeah, no, there are some chemicals that will move into the roots. Generally, if they're moving into the roots of plants in your prairie, though, you'll actually see damage to those plants as well. I really don't have a good answer for this one.
Yeah, it depends a lot on what they sprayed for sure, and what they were spraying for. Yeah. So you'd need to know that, Holly, before you could go any further, and it's unfortunate if you got that drift. It's a tough situation for sure.
Yeah, the similar thing happened to me, where the neighbor hired a lawn company, and the person who was spraying got a little overzealous at the property line, and I lost a gorgeous lilac for about the same reason. While probably what he sprayed wasn't in and of itself bad, but over time, multiple applications throughout the year, I lost my nice little dwarf lilac on the property line. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't know what he sprayed either. But, yeah, to give you a solid answer, I would need to know what your neighbor actually put down.
There you go, Holly. Thank you for calling. Well, Lynn in Washington County, what's on your mind?
I hope you can hear me okay. My suggestion was imidacloprid that I bought in powdered form and sprinkled over the top of the plant that I had, which was a lemon plant. And so I'm sure it would work for limey. I had been using alcohol on a Q-tip for about a month before I gave up and tried to use the systemic. And I did find it at Stein's Garden Center. Thank you.
All right, imidacloprid for limey, my lime tree.
Yeah. Just make sure you check your, if you harvest limey to eat, if you eat the fruit off from it, just make sure that you check how long you have to wait after applying imidacloprid in order to pick your fruit.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, Lynn. I appreciate that suggestion. I wrote it down, and I will follow up on it. Thank you. Bill in Racine, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Say, I used Bayer, the product about 3 years old, to try to kill off the creeping Charlie. And I did apply it, and it didn't seem to do much. So is the product too old, or is it too late in the year to attack that creeping Charlie?
It's probably the wrong time of the year.
I say, if you did it recently, it's the wrong time of year. Fall is a great time to go after Creeping Charlie. If you want to do someone else's lawn, you're welcome to come here because it is all over my backyard. It is a very notorious weed to get rid of in the lawn. Fall is the best time. And the reason is because since it's a perennial and will come back year after year, in the fall, it's preparing itself for winter. So it's taking starches and sugars down to the root. So if you spray it then, it's going to take that chemical right down to the root. So you'll get better kill. So you'll get better control on it. 3-year-old product, if it's in a spot where it doesn't freeze and thaw, it should be okay. If you kept it in a garage where the product may have frozen over the winter, you may see like reduced effectiveness of it. But most products are rated to last several years post-purchase. So yeah. As long as it didn't freeze, it should be fine. But, yeah, if you just treated recently, they've kind of shut down in the heat. So hit them again in the fall when the temperatures cool down.
Yeah, there you go, Bill. Thank you so much. And don't expect miracles because it comes back.
I got it under control once, and it's back again. So it's going to be a constant thing.
Yeah, I've kind of given up. I do the best I can with my lawn, keeping the lawn as healthy as I can, mow it high, and, you know, proper fertilization is about. And then sometimes in the spring, as I've said on the show in the past, I'll get daughter Emily out there with me and we'll sit there and pull it by hand. And you'd be amazed at what you can pull in a half hour. And that does seem to knock it back. But you're out there hand pulling it. It's kind of fun, actually, especially if you've got a daughter or a son that you can do it with, or get a few people out there. You can do a lot in a pretty short time. Roberta in Chautauqua, Minnesota, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering what your guest puts into her raised beds. I have raised beds, and I've used the Mel's mix, peat moss and vermiculite and compost. But it dries out so quickly. I'm just wondering what she uses.
Okay.
Well, because I work for Miracle-Gro, it's Miracle-Gro raised bed soil. But basically what it is, it's a mix of peat moss and compost. So when I used to do kind of some product training, when you're trying to say what's best for a raised bed, it's like it's an oversized container with an open bottom. So you need something that is a little lighter weight than in-ground soil or, you know, straight compost, but you need something that's a little denser than potting mix. So you don't need perlite or anything that's going to increase drainage because they tend to be so big. But if you wanted to do probably the best, if you wanted to mix your own, would be like a potting mix or a sphagnum peat moss, straight sphagnum peat moss with 50-50 blend with that and compost. And that should give you kind of that right density that shouldn't dry out so fast, but will still give plenty of air movement and water movement for your plants to grow.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much, Roberta. Appreciate your call. Well, I tell you what, watering, you know, water did come up a couple of times. And, you know, we've always said about, you know, make sure you get your plants get an inch of rainwater, the equivalent of an inch of rainwater a week. If it doesn't rain an inch, you should irrigate so that you get an inch. Is that about right, Amy?
If your temperature stays consistent year-round, yeah, that's right. When your temperature starts, you know, going above 80, like we've had 90s, upper 80s, low 90s, yeah. You need to increase that, especially with tomatoes, because tomatoes were really deep. So you want to make sure that you're almost putting 2 inches on a week to make sure that you're getting water deep enough into the soil profile. They can keep encouraging those roots to go low. Because the minute you forget to water and you get this kind of what we call a perched water table where only the top couple inches of soil gets wet, that's where all your roots form. And that's when plants start falling over and then tomatoes start rotting and peppers start rotting and then your plants just start to go downhill. So when it's really hot, you need to water more. And it's not necessarily you have to go out every day, but when you do water, you want to make sure that you're watering extra deep and extra thorough.
I was just amazed. I mentioned it earlier with I've straw bale gardened with tomato plants for sure are kind of my favorite on straw bales. But I was amazed the first year I did that when knocked the bales out and the plants, the roots were really long and straight down. I was surprised at how deep those roots went.
Yeah, easily will go down close to 20 inches if you give them ample room.
Yeah, these were 20 inches for sure. And as you compare it to something like a maple tree or something where many trees, they, you know, the roots, the main roots are in that first, 6 inches of soil or so, aren't they?
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, you've got stuff that roots really, really deep and seeks water deep in that soil, and then you've got the other stuff that's just kind of trailing along in that couple inches of soil.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great fun talking with you, Amy. Amy Enfield is our guest today. She's a horticulturist for Bonnie Plants and an R&D product development manager for live goods at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company. And fun talking with her about all those herbs and vegetables. We haven't talked much about herbs, but herbs are another fun thing to talk about. And we will be able to talk about that as well on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. To have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, my guest today, Amy Enfield. horticulturist for Bonnie Plants and an R&D product development manager for live goods at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company. She has her PhD in plant and environmental science from Clemson University, a bachelor's and master's in horticulture from Michigan State. You know, we should get to some of our emails. I have quite a few emails, Amy. So, Florin, here's one from Florin. She said they're having problems with their tomatoes. They're not red, but they're keeping partially green.
Partially green? Part of it could be, I mean, I know some varieties will stay partially green, but I'm assuming she planted a red tomato unless something got mislabeled, which sometimes will happen. I know there are a few varieties out there that will have green stripes and things in them. The only thing I could think of that would keep something partially green would be like a pollination issue.
That's
it wasn't like completely pollinated. The flower wasn't completely pollinated. That is the only thing I could think of that would keep part of a fruit from turning red.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else either. Jackie emailed and wonders, is Miracle-Gro safe to use on fruits and vegetables, and is it considered organic?
So, Blue Miracle-Gro is not organic. If you want to do your vegetables and herbs completely organic, and I know a lot of people who do, Miracle-Gro does have a line of performance organics that is organic. So there are organic options out there for Miracle-Gro, but the base Miracle-Gro products themselves are not organic. They are perfectly fine to use on your vegetables, but I know there's a lot of people out there that like to grow edible plants organically, and there are options for that as well in multiple lines, not just Miracle-Gro.
Yeah, for sure. Sue in Madison emailed wondering, can she grow baby rice popcorn in her sunny backyard? The baby rice popcorn has really tiny kernels, and she's wondering, what can she do with the corn to dry it into popcorn?
Theoretically, if she's got lots of sun and lots of space, yeah, you can grow corn in your backyard. Generally, popcorn-type corn dries by themselves, so you leave the ears on, and then they will naturally dry down when they're ready. We did popcorn once when I was growing up, and once was enough. We went back to sweet corn.
Oh, man. Here, another listener sent in that something relating to the caller with the high pH in the soil. His guess is the caller might be watering with soft water, which could be contributing to high pH.
That'll do it.
Yeah, he recommends using gypsum to balance out the soft water, if that's what he's got. I don't know if gypsum would. I guess it would help. But soft water.
If you're using soft water, you're basically putting the alkalinity right back into it. So, yeah, you got to get your water tested too, not just your soil. But yeah, that's a good point.
And Amy in Rushford emailed, she has a large heated garage. She'd love to try to grow vegetables year round in her garage. Will they taste as good as good grown under light versus natural sunlight? So she'd use grow lights in her heated garage.
Will they taste as good? Yes. if you select the right varieties. Now, there are some varieties that are some of the first compact varieties that they came up with that are good for like year-round growing or growing in hydroponic units, if you go that route. They sacrifice compactness for flavor. They didn't taste very good. But there are a lot of new varieties coming to market now that are compact, work well inside, work well for year-round growing, that they taste good. I mean, I think part of it is mental, that nothing is going to taste quite as sweet as a freshly harvested, you know, beefsteak tomato off your outdoor garden. But you can get plenty of favorable tomatoes year-round indoors that, you don't have to sacrifice taste for. They don't have to taste like those greenhouse tomatoes that
everybody's used to getting in restaurants in the winter months because they know no one's producing real tomatoes anywhere.
Yeah. Let's take a call. Bruce in Plymouth, it's your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there. Question regarding, I got silver maples I got up and down my driveway. 2 years now, I had plastic tubing over them so the rabbits wouldn't eat them. And I've just taken that off, and now I got shoots from the ground all the way up. When can I cut those shoots off, and what's the proper timing for that?
You can cut the shoots off anytime, and it may take multiple cutbacks. Like, it may keep trying to do it for a while, but that plastic tubing provided a nice moist environment, and it caused it to kind of sucker a little bit. But you can cut those off whenever you want. Like I said, they may try to regrow again, so it may take a couple times to get it to finally stop. But once the tree matures a little bit with the tubing off, it should stop doing it.
Yeah, especially with a silver maple, you're not going to have any trouble cutting those off any time. Carol in Racine, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have an Aero Garden, which is a Miracle-Gro product, and it's a water garden type thing, hydroponic. And I'm not having very good success replanting my plants into the garden. I probably only get about a third of them that actually come back. Is there a trick, or at what height should I replant these, or should I not even try and attempt it?
They're herbs mainly. Are you starting like with cuttings, or are you starting seed, or what are you doing in your garden?
Oh, these are the pods from the Aero pod. So they're like some kind of a peat pod maybe.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they're hydroponically grown.
And it's starting from seed, correct?
Right. It's starting from seed, yeah.
And they're not germ. Did you check they're not just sprouting. So you only get about a third of them to sprout. That's what you're saying.
No, they grow really fine in the Aero Garden.
Oh, you're trying to transplant them out of the Aero Garden. Okay,
yeah, correct.
I follow you. All right.
All right. So what do you got for us there, Amy?
So what might be happening is when roots grow 100% in oxygenated water, they actually form differently than when they grow in ground. And they get these huge like air bubbles in them. And that's to help, basically, you get that oxygen-water exchange. So that's how they kind of breathe in 100% water. So sometimes they just don't transplant well. You can try babying them along a little bit. Basically, what you're trying to do is get new roots to form once you transplant it to take over what formed in the Aero Garden. Is the best way to explain it. So you get those water-formed roots to hold on just long enough to keep the plant alive, to get other roots to form. There's no good trick on how to do that other than making sure that you are not keeping the soil too wet because those roots are so used to having oxygenated water constantly moving around them that if you keep the soil too wet, they suffocate. So it's like keeping the soil moist but not soaked. You may want to kind of keep them in a more humid location as you're trying to transplant them out. Just try anything you can do to kind of relieve the stress off that plant until it can actually form some new roots and get rooted in will help.
Yeah. I wonder if you just put them in be a lot of extra work, putting them in a pot to begin with, and then putting them from the pot into the soil? I don't know.
It depends on if you're going straight outside or if you're putting them into a container. Yeah, I would almost plant them into like a small container, let them root into that, and then transplant them into whatever you're transplanting them into.
Yeah, there you go, Carol. Thank you. Janice in Antioch, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Janice.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I have an issue with my long beans, my Asian long beans. Let me start at the beginning. I have a trellis, and early in the season, I plant the snow peas and then the Asian long beans in amongst them so that when the peas come up fine and then the beans come up slower, and then the peas are gone and the beans are growing. So I am two issues. My long beans are getting yellow on the outside of the leaves all of a sudden this last week or so. I don't know if it's too much water, not enough water, I need fertilizer, whatever. And then for a long time now, I have been having, instead of nice dark green beans, the beans are very pale green, almost minty. And they're not as nice. They don't taste as good, and they seem to have, they're puffy, like they're not solid. I'm getting more green ones now, more recently, but and I've tried fertilizing some in the spring, but I haven't lately, and so I was wondering if that was an issue.
Sounds, well, that light green, Amy, it sounds like maybe a nitrogen shortage there, but could be something else.
Yeah, it's also hard to say because beans also fix their own nitrogen in the soil, so they shouldn't need a lot of fertilizer. How much sun do they get?
Oh, it's on, well, it's on the north side of our, we have an acre. So it's on the north side, early morning. In the summer, it gets, as the sun comes through between the houses, it gets morning sun, and then the house shade goes around, but it never hits the garden. So it's pretty much in the sun until late in the evening. Then the long trees on the south side of the house start shading the garden after about, well, the sun is setting earlier now, so it's about 8 o'clock when it's starting to get shade over there and stuff when the sun is setting. But
well,
no, they're
not a lack
sun.
Of sun then.
No.
I mean, it could be nutritional. Some of it could be watering. I know, like, rain has been either get poured on or we go into droughts. So kind of inconsistent moisture could be part of the cause on that. Yeah, I would do my best to try to keep the soil as consistently moist as possible and then maybe do a little bit of a nitrogen feed on it to see if that does help. I was asking how much sun, because when you said the edges started turning yellow, I kind of thought maybe like sun scald a little bit, and that could also potentially be what's making the beans a little light yellow. But that kind of puffy, where you don't get a bean formation, and it just kind of is that puffy, mealy-type tasting bean. We had a little bit of it last year, and I don't think we ever kind of came down to what we did that caused it.
It's interesting. Well, that's what we got for you, Janice. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jan and Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Happy summer to y'all. I would like to find a fast-growing living mulch into which I want to plant perennial seedlings. The soil, the field that I'm going to be using for growing has a lot of perennial weeds, buttonweed, thistles, all the good hardy stuff. If I till the soil and then grow a living mulch from seed over it, should that tame the weeds? So my big question, I think, is if I plant Dutch clover as a living mulch, does it compete in any way with the plants that I'm planting into it?
Good question. It shouldn't if you time it correctly. So if you get your mulch down, your living mulch down and established, and it's starting to die back as your wanted perennials start to grow, it shouldn't be an issue. If they are starting to sprout and get leaves on them and your mulch is still fine and dandy and growing, then you will start seeing some competition. And it's just mainly because those little seedlings won't have access to sunlight that they're going to need to grow. So a lot of it is timing that you get your cover down to keep the weeds from taking back over, but you want that cover crop to start to decline as your perennial seeds that you want start to sprout and grow. But clover is a really good option because it's also going to boost the nitrogen back in your soil.
Yeah, for sure. There you go, Jan. Thank you. Denny in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Denny.
Hi, how you doing there?
Good.
I am digging a Walpini in my backyard and was wondering what plants, besides the ones I want to eat, like spinach and just fresh greens for the winter, what plants might I have some good success with. I'm not sure how warm it will be in the winter. I'm just going to be an experiment, I guess.
Yeah. What do you think, Amy?
How deep is it? How much root, like how much soil volume do you have?
On the north side of it, right now it's about 8 feet high. I'm down about 8 feet. And then the south side of it is about 5 feet to let light in. And I'm still going to go down a little more, I think.
So you've got plenty of soil. Actually, a lot of your root crops you might be able to get. So spinach will do wonders, kind of your cool season crops. But I've had great success of keeping carrots over the winter as long as I kind of like throw straw mulch over them and protect them. So as long as that ground doesn't freeze solid.
What about any fruit trees or anything like that, Amy?
You could try fruit trees. You're going to want to get them in the fall and make sure they get established. You still may want to put a nice decent layer of mulch to kind of help buffer the soil. But I know people who have kept, you know, fruit trees alive in giant containers. So it's doable.
It's doable. There you go, Denny. Go ahead.
Also, I just transplanted a currant bush and it looks real nasty. Like, is it supposed to look pretty nasty for a while before it comes back, you think? Or I just did it last week.
Yeah, keep it watered. Summer is really hard from a transplanting standpoint. Just make sure you keep it well watered and hopefully it will bounce back. I know that some people will not have luck when they transplant in the summer just because the plant's under so much stress. But keep it watered, and as the temperatures start to cool, you may start noticing it to come back on you.
Yeah. All right, I'll put a shade umbrella by it or something then too.
Yeah, okay, just kind of there you go. It a little bit.
There you go. Thanks, Denny.
All right, so on.
Brian in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hi there. I've got a Macintosh apple tree in my backyard. It's got to be at least 10 years old. Last year, when all the apples got the size of about a quarter, every one of them dropped off the tree. And now this year, the same thing happened, but not all of them dropped off.
Okay. Well, the tree may be trying to tell you something there. Amy, what do you think?
I've heard of apple trees spontaneously aborting flowers or aborting fruit. Generally, I mean, some fruit dropping is natural. They will do it. They will try to naturally thin themselves, especially if they think they are overloaded and they can't support it. But generally, when you get a ton of drop, the plant is stressed somehow, whether it's just really, really dry, something else is going on that even internally, like it might be virus or disease internally, you can't tell yet. But generally, when it starts aborting all its fruit, it's an indication that that tree is under stress somehow because it's trying to conserve energy. So it's trying to conserve energy to save itself at the expense of all the fruit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So you just, what do you do, wait and see, Amy, on it? Or
Are you doing any kind of like spray program on it to make sure that the fruit is edible and not insect-ridden?
I know there's insects. Now there's insects on it. The tree overall looks like it's in kind of poor health this year. It seems like everything's been attacking it.
Yeah, it could be in decline. It could just be kind of in natural decline for it. And it just may be at its life. I mean, I know trees that will go, Macintosh will go a lot longer than that, but there's some sort of underlying problem that is causing that tree to go into decline. You could try treating it for the insects. Obviously, getting rid of the insects will release some of the stress on it.
Yeah.
but and at least say maybe some of the fruit that are still on there. That would be my recommendation. But yeah, when you start seeing fruit trees drop all their fruit, it's stressed in some way, whether it's insect attack, it's drought stressed, or something else is going on internally that we can't necessarily see.
Yeah,
I figured it was some kind of stress because it's like it's all it happens in within 1 and 2 days. It just boom, they just
all drop. Yep. There you go, Brian. Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And another Brian has white mildew, probably powdery mildew on his tomato plants. Is there much you can do with that in terms of fungicides?
Yeah, I mean, you can find, and if you want to, there's lots of fungicides out there labeled for edibles that will take care of powdery mildew. It's probably going to be multiple applications.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling it's going to be a bad powdery mildew year across the board. So it's likely not a one and done, but you can stop it from getting worse.
Amy, it's a great pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was a lot of fun. Thanks, Amy.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Amy Enfield is a horticulturist for Bonnie Plants and an R&D product development manager for live goods at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company. Great to have her with us here on Garden Talk. I hope you have a great weekend, but I also hope you'll stay with us because, hey, we got lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer.